Now, this is our annual workplace Sunday, and yet you find you have a double whammy. You arrive to discover you don't have Professor John Wyatt preaching. That's disappointing enough. But to make matters even worse, you are landed with a clergyman instead. Because you're thinking, what does he know about work? There was a second-hand car salesman trying to persuade a customer that he was onto a bargain. And he said to him, and this car, he said, belonged to the local vicar. He just used it to pop down to the church on Sundays. Now, a friend of mine, who was often quite rude to me, so I grew to expect it, my friend and neighbour across the road from the rectory when I lived up in Manchester, was a professor, and he never minded saying exactly what he was thinking. And when the church built a new admin block where I had an office, it meant I would no longer work from home. And instead, I would walk all of 100 yards to the office most mornings. This was back in the 1980s. And one day he said to me, not long after I started that, he said, at last, you're going to work like the rest of us. And now that I'm about to retire from paid employment, just about 3 or 4 weeks left, that's 40 years worth, 43 years to be in fact, I look back and I recognize how important it is, whatever our work, how important it feels to convey the impression that we're managing. And that's this evening's title, I Can Manage. The urban myth, I can manage. We don't get on in this world by suggesting we can't. We don't say at an interview, well, of course, I'll take the job if offered and just see how I get on, not promising anything. In the course of my work, I interview many clergy applying to be ministers for churches, churches often in decline, with relatively few resources and up against an increasingly secular environment. And I find myself asking, as I ask the questions out loud, I'm thinking, can this person in front of me turn this church around? Not just is this person nice enough or even spiritual enough, but are they tough enough for the job? And whatever the line of work, any hint of uncertainty or perceived weakness that she or he isn't managing or won't be able to manage, that rings alarm bells. It's bad for business, it's bad for morale, bad for everybody. And yet, we are only human. We have our limits. Even if we're prepared to be stretched to the very end of our limits in our work, we might become stressed and possibly even reach burnout. But just before we go further into this subject, it's worth widening the net. This is not just the paid, the employed who feel the pressure. It could be, for example, students who are tackling exams, or home carers looking after their elderly relatives, a debilitating task as much as 24/7. And those in voluntary work are feeling, particularly these days, the heat even more, with the raft of cuts in public spending. But we're asking, whatever kind of work we're employed in, or we're doing voluntary, what are the symptoms of not managing? If the urban myth is I can manage, what are the signs that we're not actually able to do that? One medic specializing in the field of burnout wrote this as a kind of summary. Burnout, he said, is defined around exhaustion, poor perception of self, and perceived poor achievement. Let's have a look at that. Put it this way. Number one, exhaustion, the demands of the job. A number of years ago now, one of the big banks ran the slogan, the bank that likes to say yes. With hindsight, they might have served their customers better sometimes by saying no. But in life, and certainly in work, it is good normally to say yes. Yes, I will, rather than, well, I'm afraid that won't be possible. In any case, survival at work often depends on never saying no. Success might actually demand it. The question on the table, can we afford to, is answered with the inevitable next question, can we afford not to? Answer is, we have no option but to take it on. We have to say yes. Now, this isn't an easy issue. It's not easy just to turn around and say, well, in future, I'm not going to say yes all the time. Occasionally I'm going to say no. That's not straightforward. But there are other factors to think about, not only our work. An obvious one is health. And another very obvious and crucial one is our personal relationships. If we always say yes, how are they going to be affected? Because any of these, if we get them wrong, can actually mean that we become a cropper. So it's worth pausing. Are there times, it's worth just thinking about it, are there times when we would be wise to say the occasional no? The main characters of the New Testament, and by that I mean Jesus, of course, and Paul, they had the most punishing of schedules. Jesus was typically up before dawn and working into the night. And yet he would be telling his disciples when it was rather late that it was time for them to go home. But more than the length of a working day, it's the nature of work that means the stakes get higher all the time. And of course, we get tired, sometimes very tired. And absolute exhaustion is not too far away. Number two, poor perception of self, the demands that I place on myself. The front we can present at work, confident that we're up for it, can hide our own doubts and questions as to our ability to stay the course. But we're rising. We didn't get that promotion. We're not appreciated. We're not encouraged. We can feel our ratings going down. Our reputation as a high flyer is not what it was. We feel ourselves struggling to keep up. Now, I don't know your view of this, but I look at it from my perspective, at my age. In my view, the midterm of our working life is particularly hard. It's in that stage we have a bit less energy than we used to have, less optimism than when we were younger, perhaps. We probably have more people management responsibilities to cover, and that can be very demanding on top of our professional tasks. And it may be that at that stage of our life, home and all that that means may be more complex. Perhaps bosses are beginning to look over our shoulder at the bright young staff coming up behind. It can be worrying inside, even if we try not to show it. This is all about the poor perception of ourselves. And then thirdly, the perceived poor achievement, the demands of others, the expectations they have of us. Now, for us to believe that nobody else could have done better on this particular project is no comfort. That's not how work is assessed. Perception is reality. What people judge us by. Brian Draper wrote about what he called trickle-down fear. He said, fear continues to grip our culture, the fear of being left behind, of being passed over. He said, one of the top 10 fears among CEOs is of being found out. I sometimes think that being a Christian makes it even harder still. As well as the expectations of people at work or our family at home, there are the watching Christians as well. That person in the fellowship we rather admire as being very successful, you know, is now not doing quite as well as he or she was. Now, Jesus didn't actually use the word burnout, not that I can find it anyway, but he certainly addressed the whole problem of anxiety. Worry is the inward state of mind. And worry, when unchecked, can lead through unseen agony inside us, perhaps to collapse. Maybe only then do other people notice. Now, determination, confidence, drive is not wrong. We need it. And it's right that we hate to give in. We're determined to finish the job, whatever the challenge, whatever the level of difficulty. And yet, at the same time, this isn't instead of that, but at the same time as that, we're allowed to admit that we are vulnerable. And as a Christian, Paul, who worked his socks off, was never afraid to acknowledge his weakness. It is then that we hear God saying to us, as he said to Paul, wonderful words, my grace, he said, is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. But suppose we start to worry we will not make it in our job, worry that perhaps I will not establish financial security for myself, and for my dependents into retirement. Worry that we will not be seen as having done well. It's just typical of Jesus, and I just encourage you just to keep looking at the Gospels and see how he reacted to what was going on around him. Not just what he could see, but what he knew was going through people's minds. Jesus confronted anxiety, and he taught us how to deal with it. And this isn't a lesson purely about work. It's about what goes on in our mind. And this is how we're going to spend the rest of our time looking at this particular chapter 6 of Matthew and verse 25 onwards. Because I think I see Jesus taking us through this imaginary slideshow. There are 5 slides, and this is the first one. The first is, when we admit we are vulnerable, 1, ask what life is all about. Verse 25, Jesus said, I tell you, don't worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes? Jesus doesn't lift us out of our work. He doesn't lift us out of our life when he gets hairy. What is forbidden is worry, not work. But he does urge us to step back and ask ourselves the question about the way that we go about living. Worry increases the more ambitious our personal objectives. We have, many of us inside us, and we can feel it sometimes, this instinct for progress, to do better, to live better. Not just for ourselves, but also for our families. Bill McKibben, in his book Enough, quoted a mother as saying, you want to give your child the edge, no matter what. And that mother, what she's saying there is understandable. But if we take that too far across our lives, such attitudes can simply build new levels of stress. John Davis described his move to a housing estate on the edge of Liverpool. He tried to understand what he thought about his new place as he wrote an article. And he said about it, there was nothing especially wrong or bad or sad about the new place I was in. But by comparison to these other places, it seemed just, well, so ordinary. And because it was ordinary, he found himself apologizing for it. And he admitted he was one of those who was naturally seduced by the extraordinary. It's one thing to praise the simple lifestyle when we have no choice, when recession bites and we have to downsize. It's another to change to simplicity of living only because we think that is right. But if we can manage it, this is not just cutting back on things, it's actually cutting back on anxiety. So, first of all, ask what life is all about. And then I think Jesus is saying in verses 26 to 29, take a good look at creation. Work is largely a question of head down and simply get on with it. We can't waste time just idly looking out of the window. But it is good, says Jesus, to make a very occasional exception, and particularly to look at creation. And when we look at creation, it doesn't take us away from the pressures of life and work, but it does give another perspective on them. Now, we don't need to visit the jungle or the Scottish Highlands to get a good view. Regent's Park is fine. Sometimes creation is a great perspective because it is so big. I find that particularly looking out over the ocean. It is so amazing. But Jesus recommends it this time because it is so uncluttered. It's so simple, it's beautiful, it's straightforward and uncomplicated. And maybe it doesn't do us any harm sometimes to have a look at our own lives and say, is that what my way of life is? Uncomplicated or not? And Jesus says, look at the birds. And then further down, look at the lilies of the field. Aren't they beautiful? Now take the birds, they're very busy. I had a letter from a young man a couple of nights ago, and he said, I am rather busy. Now I know what he meant by that. I knew he was at breaking point. I know the kind of work he's in, I know the kind of hours that he's working. and it's almost too much for him. The birds are always working, building their own accommodation or gathering food. Creation is not an example of idleness. And yet as we look down these verses, and perhaps you're looking at them as I'm talking away up here, you're seeing that the element of worry appears to be missing. And Jesus is telling us that worry can't make us grow taller on one hand or live longer on the other. It doesn't help. We can't avoid our responsibilities, but we can reduce what is unrealistic or unreasonable. And we will always do well to stop. And as Jesus encourages us to do, look at creation. The third one, believe in God. Verses 30 to 32. Let me just read those verses now. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, would he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? So don't worry saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. We cannot rely on people at work to affirm us, to stop by and appreciate or congratulate us. They have their own pressures. Sometimes they will say they believe in us, partly to ensure they get the best out of us, to achieve the targets that they have to meet. We are necessary cogs in the overall machine, whether the machine is a school or a company or a church. Two or three weeks ago in the morning, David Turner came up with a quote from one business leader talking about his workforce. He said, if they burn out, we don't want them. Now, as I heard that, I thought, is that cruel or is it honest? Perhaps there's a bit of both. To my way of thinking, it's a rather inadequate model of management. But it's a relief to listen to Jesus. Because Jesus is saying here in these verses that God cares for us. He knows what we need. He knows how we feel. And that matters to him. God places a value on us. He places a value on our work, regardless of how we're rated by other people. He sees when we're doing our best. And if we are struggling, he doesn't turn his back on us. It's all too easy to believe in God, except at work. I'm not talking here about Christian witness, so that's important. I'm not talking about Christian morals and integrity, and that's important as well. I'm talking about our own survival. The pagans, as Jesus calls them here, have no option but deal with life without God. We are not in that position. And therefore we say to ourselves as we're looking through this passage tonight, I will believe in the God that I say I believe in. We have a heavenly Father who knows, who cares. We might need that someday. And it's worth getting it into our minds very clearly now. Number four, set this particular goal. When we get to verse 33, Jesus says something very positively here. He says, seek first his kingdom, the Father's kingdom, and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Now, we know that when we go to work, we can't simply do what we feel like. And we can't just go at the pace we feel like. And I'm sure that people like Kath will come along and help us in our own performance. We need goals, we need targets, we need objectives. And we work to meet them. It's serious business. That's what we're there for. But there is another serious business. And it's here in verse 33. Seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness. This isn't setting up a conflict between our work and our Christianity. Those two things don't do battle on equal terms. The goal that Jesus sets is the priority that oversees and supervises everything we do. It's rather tempting sometimes to see the Christian faith as a list of don'ts, but here is a definite positive. David Hemery was an athletics Olympic champion a long time ago now, almost in my youth, and he was a Christian as well. And he once said, the key is the mind, and it must be positive. But if we're not careful, we become more positive and definite in our work than in our Christian life. Don't assume that just because we're Christians and we believe in Jesus, don't assume that we have made this our objective automatically. In fact, when we look at this verse and we say, no, I must set it. I must set it now. I must set it again. I will seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness. Seeking God's kingdom and his righteousness isn't easy. It demands energy, plus courage, plus sensitivity, plus determination. And when we take that on, as Jesus is saying here, it's not so much that everything else falls into our lap, as that everything else falls into its place. Anxiety is always worse when we are compromising our Christian goal, when we're trying to lead two lives. And when we do that, we can get ourselves in the most terrible mess. Can you see that? And when we look at what Jesus is encouraging us to do by way of a particular goal, we start afresh. Maybe we're in a bit of a mess somewhere in our life. We start afresh with one overriding objective, that from now I will seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness. And so we come to slide number 5. And when we get to verse 34, Jesus says, don't worry about tomorrow. The future God has in store for us, his ultimate salvation and security, is not under threat. But human life in the meantime can sometimes look rather disturbing and worrying. Now, as I said, I'm about to retire from paid employment. And as I look back, I know it's been stretching, particularly stretching at times, tough. But over all those years, 40 plus years, times have changed dramatically. For example, the word pension was designed to give us reassurance. And in short, there is plenty to worry about. But Jesus ends, and I find it fascinating, he ends this passage like this, not with verse 33, but with verse 34. Jesus ends not with some amazing spiritual advice or encouragement, but with something intensely practical and sensible. We can't help worrying when we think about the future, not about ours only, but also the future of those we love. And because of that, we should not dwell on what might or might not happen. We are to discipline ourselves to focus on today, what has to be done today, and then we do the things that have to be done today. And we do them well. When I was a little whippersnapper, I lived down in Cornwall. And very fond of Mevigizzi, where we lived when I was very young indeed. There's a little harbour there with lots of boats tied up. Looks a very pleasant, relaxed kind of scene. Although it wasn't all the time. There was, for many places, it was their place of work, fishermen. And one of the boats in Mevigizzi Harbour, I can remember now, was called Why Worry? Not W-H-Y, but just why, and then worry. Why worry? Now we look at that and we think, well, it's a nice message. It's all very well for boats. But actually, the message is fair. Of course, we make plans. But there is no point to worrying. And Jesus tells us straight, don't brush it off and carry on as before. Don't worry about tomorrow. Today, there is plenty to be getting on with. In life, we can get so worried, sometimes so worried, that actually it's as though we lose God. We become isolated. We think he's not interested. Work pressures get us down badly sometimes. And therefore, it's a relief to actually turn over the page of the New Testament. Not only did Jesus understand about those, but Paul as well. He knew all about pressures. He did a great long list of all the things he'd had to manage and cope with in his life, physical and spiritual and mental. And because we're like Paul, we do well to run that slideshow that Jesus gave us on a regular basis. But as well as running the slideshow, he also kept God always in the picture. And having done that himself, Paul, he wrote in Philippians 4, 6 and 7. Let's turn to that, and then we can end on this note. I think they're famous verses for a lot of us, but maybe it's good for us to finish here tonight. Page 1181. And here we are in Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 and 7. I'm sure that Paul knew only too well the kind of teaching that Jesus gave on anxiety, and he reminds us here. And he says in verse 6, do not be anxious about anything. It's not just that we cut it off, full stop, but instead, in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, for God's goodness, present your request to God. And in telling God our worries, like when we're not managing, God responds. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus.